Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Elevated Places with Dr. Ava Mahan. Dr. Ava is a gifted attorney, researcher, lecturer, and author of 5 books. She received her Juris Doctorate from Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., and is a member of the New York Bar Association. Dr. Ava has been featured in Essence magazine many times and was named by Essence as being one of America's most powerful black women. Join Dr. Ava every Thursday evening on Elevated Places, where you will hear a message that will provide you with the tools needed to repair and uplift the spirit, moral character, and living condition of the black man and woman. Our call-in number is 347-324-5091. Or visit us on our radio show page at blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. And now, here is your host, Dr. Ava Muhammad.
Assalamu alaikum, peace be unto you, and welcome back to Elevated Places. Thursday night is Ask Dr. Ava evening. That is the night when I, along with my esteemed panel and our guest, are at your disposal to ask and raise any question you wish. We are all aware by now that a profound message was delivered this past Sunday at Mosque Mariam, the flagship mosque of the Nation of Islam, by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. He spoke into both what is taking place across the sea and what is taking place here in the United States, and in this moment, specifically Ferguson, Missouri, which he characterized as a microcosm of the macrocosm of the conditions that exist globally. We know that we are in the end of the time of the rule of the Caucasian. And therefore, we are in need of both the guide and the guidance, and we have both in Minister Louis Farrakhan. And so it is a blessing to have been able to see and hear him. And I pray that if you were not here in Chicago, that you watched the webcast, NOI.org. If you did not, it is imperative, just for yourself as an individual, if nothing else, that you quickly, at the end of this broadcast, go and watch and listen to that message. And, of course, those of us even who were there, it is really essential that we review that message. It is not a message of prophecy. The question that we have been asking, he answered it, what we should be doing, what we should be doing. And so tonight we're going to address that issue. Of particular importance is the issue of the role of the hip-hop community in the divine intervention of Allah, not only in the affairs of black people in America, but in the affairs of the world. And it is undeniable, it is irrefutable, that the hip-hop community is, in this hour, on this plane of existence, P-L-A-N-E, is the most influential with our youth. And our youth are our future. If we don't have our youth, we have no future. And so no matter what we say, no matter how we say it, no matter what we do, no matter how we do it, if we are not reaching, if we have not embraced, and we have failed in many ways, but if we are not embracing and holding on to our offspring as any intelligent species does, we are the only species I know of on the earth that lets go of its offspring and allows its offspring to be educated by, influenced by, and exposed to not only a different life form, but a life form that is a natural enemy. We have to bring that to an end. And we have to embrace and love our future. And so that is what we're going to talk about tonight. We have some brilliant guests that are going to be joining us. And, of course, as always, we will also be joined by our analyst and contributor, Dr. Rizli Muhammad, who is student minister of agriculture for the Nation of Islam, as well as my co-host, Brother Terrence Muhammad. And I am right now, so I don't take up too much more time, going to turn the mic over to Brother Terrence to bring us up to date and then talk about our guest and let us get into this discussion tonight, both on Ferguson, Missouri, what it represents, as well as the larger picture that Ferguson, Missouri is the microcosm of. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Terrence.
Well, alaikum salam. I have a list, as you could imagine, of things that are going on. So we want to go through them extremely quick, but we want to be mindful of everything that I'm going to bring out. I do want to remind everybody, and I can't say this enough, and it's not just something I'm saying, but it's very critical and very necessary for everyone to go back and watch the time and what must be done by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. If you really want to know what's going on today, the 58-week series that he did last year on the time and what must be done can give you a lot of clarification about what is going on today. And you can see that at NOI.org. So please rewatch the time and what must be done series, and you will know what must be done in this particular time that we're living in. It's very critical and crucial that you do go back and watch that. I just want to also thank all of give support to all of the incoming college students that are going off to college. A lot of the students that graduated from MUI, you want to make sure you stay strong and have a wonderful college year. A lot of our college students are going back, so a shout out to all the college students going back. Also, we wanted to give a shout out to you, Dr. Ava Muhammad, as you just recently, a couple of days ago or yesterday, celebrated that 25th wedding anniversary with our good brother, Brother Darius Muhammad. Congratulations on 25 years strong. Yes, yes, a beautiful day, and a day where we don't see family stand together. It's a beautiful thing to be able to celebrate 25 years strong. Tomorrow I am going down, God willing, going down to Atlanta, Georgia, where they are having a memorial for Vincent Harding. Vincent Harding was one of our long-time standing civil rights leaders in the community. He transitioned a while back, and they have a memorial for him in Atlanta. And I'll just bring that up because we have a lot of our leaders that have been around for a long time that are leaving us, and we have to step up to the plate and step up to the mantle and do what is necessary to take the leadership and take the baton, as we're going to talk about tonight, this generation that will have the responsibility of carrying on this work to help our people. Also, shout out to the Mighty Mighty FOI in St. Louis. They was on an article in the New York Times. They had brothers locking hands, trying to curtail some of the issues that was going on in Ferguson, standing in between the people and the police. So it was a beautiful picture. And I will say that, you know, when we was wondering who's on the ground in Ferguson, I can say in most cities across the country, major cities across the country, that Nation of Islam have always been there, and we have always been in the community. So we didn't just show up. We've always been there. There's also a pastor, Jonathan Gentry, that you can see on YouTube. He's talking about, I apologizing to America for the acts and the whatever demonstration that they're seeing in Ferguson. He wanted to apologize to America for us acting out after over 400 years of oppression. So you need to look up that pastor. I don't know what is he preaching or what is he teaching. Also, our brother Jesse was at a demonstration for our brother Michael Brown, and the police horses was getting out of hands and messing over the demonstrators. So even the police in Houston, Texas, are getting out of line. So it's getting crazy all over the place. Our brother Talib Kweli, hip-hop artist, he did an interview with Don Lemons, and it was a powerful one that you need to look out for on the grounds in Ferguson. And I also want to just shout out some artists that are in the industry, like John Legend, who's wore a shirt in his concert about Mike Brown, G-Unit, Wiz Khalifa, J. Cole from North Carolina was there, Nelly, Jessica Caramore, Rosa Clemente. These are all people that have been on the ground checking things out. The Dream Defenders, Advancement Project, Brother Phil Agnew of the Dream Defenders. Everyone is going into Ferguson to see how they can help. And I had to give a major, major, major shout-out to Malik Zulu Shabazz of the Black Lawyers for Justice, who's on the ground, who's been working legal cases for those that have been harassed by the police, who has been on CNN, who has been supporting, who's given shout-out to the Nation of Islam on national TV to let people know that we are there on the grounds helping and working with our people. And the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan just sent out a tweet that we're in the churches and the mosques and synagogues, but he mentioned that the work is in the streets, and that's where we need to be, there with our people. So lastly, I went through a whole lot of stuff, which we're going to talk about tonight. I can't even say that much, and there's no words to express how I am thankful to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan for his tireless work and tireless love of us, that he will continue to come out at 81 years old and speak to us and give us guidance and instruction from God himself to help us deal with the time in which we're living. He spoke to a packed house at Mas Mariam, the Masala downstairs was packed, the Sanctuary, MUI was packed. We even had the large screen outside of Mas Mariam playing, so people that couldn't get in could see it outside while they was waiting. And he even spoke to a large number of artists and people from the street organizations at the best restaurant in Chicago on the South Side, Salon Restaurant. And he spoke to a lot of young people and people from the streets and music entertainment on Monday. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is the one that is at the lead and the flagship of the liberation of our people. He is the one, sir, that can calm the raging sea. He is the one. I have seen him, and I was in the midst, in the presence of those that preachers and leaders do not want to be around, don't go into the hood. He was with those that you said are the troublemakers, those that are the killers, the shot callers, and they listened to them. They gave their heart and ear to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And
that's
that,
right,
man continues to pour out love. And I'm not talking about some, you know, wannabe gangster. These were straight-up brothers, but the brothers had love, they had heart. And as we're taught, that when you're looking at the black man, you're looking at God, because in their hearts and their nature, they're good people, and they are good people. And they was listening to the words of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. So this weekend was powerful, and we can get more into that discussion tonight.
All right. Thank you so much, Brother Terrence. And we're going to be joined momentarily by two brilliant and insightful voices in this hour. Sister Yanazda Lone Wolf is on the line, as well as Brother Chuck Creekmore from allhiphop.com. And so I wanted to ask, Dr. Rizzi give a brief insight into what is happening. Then I wanted to open up the line to our guest, and then we're going to, of course, follow that with dialogue and any questions or comments from our very powerful listening audience, because Elevated Places attracts the best and the brightest. This is not a lecture channel. This is a forum for us to engage in discussion on freedom, justice, and equality. Dr. Ridgely, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
All right, we just briefly get your insight.
Yeah, I just want to say that, you know, people have made statements like we need to bring in the National Guard. I think Jesse Jackson and Roland Martin made a statement that bringing the National Guard into the inner city, in particular Chicago, and to take care of the violence. But we know how that violence can be taken care of very easily. We saw it there in Ferguson just now, what Brother Terrence talked about, the FOI. When we had the dope busters in Washington, in Chicago, in Baltimore, they cut down the crime and the dope, but then the government shut it down because they don't want the dope and the crime cut down. They know how it's done. Just simply let the community be policed by the FOI and with no guns, and with just love, and it can be done. Let me bring in no National Guards to kill our people. Why don't you bring in the FOI to let you know we are at war, and they don't want to solve the problem. They just want to make the problem. That's all I got to say. Thank you, Asma Malik, and I'm listening for the rest of the night.
No, well, you're not going to do that. You're going to. We need that insight, and it's a good way to really open up the conversation. I'm looking at the situation right now as a Trayvon Martin 2.0, because frankly, through frightened and or greedy so-called Negro leadership, we are walking the same path. As always, and it appears that there's more focus on people holding on to jobs, positions, status in a declining community than to resolution of this problem. And like you, Dr. Ridgely, you know, when you hear people talk, when you hear black people, supposedly black, saying bring in the National Guard, well, first of all, it was a brutal murder at the hands of the local arm of the national military that set all
this
off in the first place. And so to say that the solution to the violence being visited upon us by the children of our slave masters should be cured by a higher level of violence really demonstrates a complete incapacity to problem solve. To hear them say, equally aggravating to me is what I've been hearing, the police need to be retrained.
Come on.
The police do not need to be retrained. They are already trained. They are already doing exactly what they were trained to do. But as long as we remain deluded and think that there is a we that encompasses black people and white people, then do as Minister Farrakhan wrote the open letter several years ago, just stand down. If you do not have the solution, just stand down. The police do not need retraining. They need removal. They need, I repeat, removal. Black police are not in white communities.
Come on.
Period. No people, just like no people sends his children to be educated by the enemy, you don't maintain order at the hands of the enemy. You don't have lions policing the zebra herd.
Come on.
Because to the lion, the zebra is food. That is all they will be ever. So the zebras do not train or teach their children to try to negotiate with a lion because that is your natural enemy. And so the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has said, after 400 years of our blood, sweat, and tears, it is time for us to separate. And nowhere on the airwaves are we hearing that, and there's only one man with the solution to this problem, and that is the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And so, but that doesn't mean we're not open to callers who don't agree. I don't want to intimidate anybody and think that you can't have another view. But what I would say to you is that everything that's being tried out here in Ferguson, been there, done that.
Go ahead.
For 50 years, we have been using this approach, and this is where it has gotten us. An 18-year-old black child gunned down 2:30 in the afternoon in broad daylight, one bullet through the top of his head. See, why are we still talking when the so-called kill shot went down through the top of his head? And yet we're still having a conversation. We're still talking about a special prosecutor. I think not. So we have on the line with us, and thank you, Brother Terrence, for making that possible, two very busy people. I want to get them in this discussion. And that is, first of all, Sister Yanazda Lone Wolf, this beautiful young woman who is just such a powerhouse and who is representative of what Brother Terrence spoke of earlier. See, this is our future. This is our future. When you see and hear her, and oh my God, when if you can meet her children, we're talking about New World Order. You can see it. But I want to welcome you first to the line, Sister Yanazda. Assalamu alaikum. And
always
we're trying
a
to
pleasure.
Get, there it goes. Oh, yes, ma'am.
It's always a pleasure to be on the show, and I thank you so much. I look up to you in so many various ways, so it's just an honor. So thank you.
Well, thank you, and it's a pleasure to have you on. And also, we're opening up the mic for our brother Chuck Creekmuir from allhiphop.com. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Chuck.
Peace. How are you?
I am wonderful, and thank you also for taking time out from your schedule to help enlighten our listeners and us on and share with us your insight, both of you, on what is going on and sharing your perspective. And, of course, this is this show is not formal. We're not scripted. We're not going down a list of subtopics. We want to have you share your insight into the current situation, and particularly from the perspective of, we'll start with you, Sister Yanazda, and I know you were here at the mosque on Sunday, and I just wanted to get your view or what you took away from Minister Farrakhan's message.
You know, it was very powerful, as well as his wisdom that I was able to gain and apply, because I was already about to travel to Ferguson. I just have that militancy in me, the activism, want to march, and I was the only girl born during the longest walk, which was the American Indian Movement's longest walk in 1978. And my mother, so it's in me to be a freedom fighter, and to I've marched with, during the time of the immigration, as well as Trayvon Martin, and anything that I feel that I see injustice, I want to be able to put my hands and you know, put on my combat boots and figure out a way that how I could be able to fight for freedom, justice, equality with everyone else that's with wants to do it as well. So I wanted to go to Ferguson, but going to the mosque on Sunday just gave me a whole nother perspective when the minister was speaking, that it's bigger, and it's a bigger plan and a master plan. So it was, for me, I believe that it was better to stay in Chicago and to try to come, you know, link with other like minds in the hip-hop entertainment, educator, and then that within that community, and how we can develop our own master plan. And something that you both were saying, I had a dinner the other night with the minister, Minister Louis Farrakhan, and I was explaining to him what I saw in regards to the master plan. And I'm going to go spiritual with, and I know, Dr. Ava, you could go spiritual with me as well. I'm going to go spiritual with all the listeners that's listening in. I strongly believe that if you look at in the past several months, virally on the Internet, we have been seeing video footage of police killing and brutally abusing men of color, all across the nation in certain urban communities. Some of them have been remote from certain major cities. Some of them have been inside in major cities. And I believe that they have been using these video footages to find out, to get the emotion of people of color in urban communities, so they can pull out their toys that they have been training with for so many years, so they can be able to put in their martial law or make it a police state. I strongly believe it, that this is that's what they've been doing. And if you look at the rise of emotion with Trayvon Martin, that was an indication for them to for the enemy to look at, like, okay, we can start implementing and pulling out our tanks, pulling out our rifles, pulling out all these toys we've been training with, and start actually finally, after so many years of talking about martial law, we could start applying it. And I believe they thought it was going to happen with our brother Eric in Staten Island, but it happened in Ferguson. And so
yeah.
I believe there was a master plan. And so with that, in turn, I believe that it's time for us to develop our master plan. And when you were talking about separation, I also strongly believe that it's time for us to go to sovereign land in Native American communities and develop our own communities. I have said this for so many years in the past 10 years that I have working within the indigenous communities that I've been, as well as in the urban communities, I have been promoting and saying they want us home. They want us to come home. And I believe that it's time. And I believe that we need to go ahead and start developing, not the relationships, because the relationships have been developed with the work of the messenger and as well as my mother and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and myself, but it's time for us to actually get in our car and start building our homes and setting up our own communities on sovereign land.
Well said, well said. And I think your commentary is both spiritual as well as practical. And we do not subscribe to a spook God. He
yeah.
empowers us to go and do for self. And that was very well said. Brother Chuck, we wanted to get your insight on the hip-hop generation and what you see with all of the events that are aligning themselves going on now.
Well, I'm getting a sense that, you know, people are fired up. You know, they are absolutely tired and sick and at their wit's end with this type of behavior from the police as well as other authority figures such as security guards. And not for nothing, just as we've seen with Jordan Davis, just civilians who are armed and ready to kill. So I feel like we still have a lot of work to do with our young people, in particular those that are not politically minded. But I feel like these are the types of situations that open minds and create a fertile ground with them mentally that allows us to then, we're able to, reach them much easier. And, I feel like people look at the rioting in different ways, but I feel like when you do not give people opportunity, when people don't have jobs, when they don't have a sense of hope, this is what happens. And I don't obviously want to see casualties and things, you know, death and things of that nature, but I definitely also feel that, you know, it's time for us to wake up and understand that things are not getting better in the present state. It's getting worse, and we have to take control of our own destiny.
You know, I love what you just said before we open the lines up to the callers as our next point, that these circumstances are deteriorating. You know, we're not seeing any progress from our effort to go along, to get along, to negotiate. I am, as a lawyer, appalled by everything that is going on with the Michael Brown murder. It is universal law. Every lawyer on earth knows it. That even no matter what you hear them saying on CNN, MSNBC, Fox, whatever, all of them know that it is bizarre and it is irrational for this case to be litigated on television and on
mm-hmm.
social media and in the streets. This only happens when a black person is gunned down or really lynched by a white person. That's the only time that everyone comes apart, and the normal and accepted components of due process just fly out the window.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that Article 2 of the Constitution states we are three-fifths of a human. Three-fifths. We're a fraction of a full-fledged human being. Now, as a former prosecutor, I can tell you that you never, almost never, have eyewitnesses in a murder because most people don't kill people in front of witnesses. And so you are generally left to rely on circumstantial evidence, forensics, et cetera. It is a prosecutor's dream to have one eyewitness, let alone two or three. However, now look at this, brothers and sisters. Despite the fact we have three witnesses, the companion of the victim, a young woman who was driving into the neighborhood to pick up someone, I think, to go to work, another person looking out the window, and more have begun to come forward. They've subjected themselves to interviews. They've been questioned. All of them are clear. They have sharp memories. They present well. All right? All you need to charge an individual with a crime is what is called probable cause. That means it probably took place. But what is going on television is because this is a white male, the killer, he's white, he's male, and he's a cop. That means he is immune to being charged with murdering a black man. It's not possible in their world. And so what they are demanding, even senators, all that, they want him convicted in the public realm, which is not possible. And so they are rejecting the testimony of a minimum of three adult black people, which one of them would be sufficient to come down with a charge of murder or at a minimum some level of manslaughter. Okay?
Right.
You have all the elements. You have a dead body. That body is full of bullet holes. You have the weapon. You have the person that fired the weapon. And you have the testimony. Nothing trumps human testimony. But when it comes to black people, three black people are not sufficient for white people. So they continue to sit on TV and say, we're waiting for the forensics. We're waiting for the forensics. So then here comes the most renowned pathologist in the world, Michael Badden, in the world, does an autopsy, comes out with his assistant, minimum of six shots. The so-called kill shot went into the top of his head. There's no way it could have gone in the top of his head unless he was down.
Right.
Right,
and
right.
yet, at the end of that, here they come right behind it, white folks. Well, we don't know. We still don't know. Now, either you're exceedingly wicked, you're a sociopath, or you're very stupid. And we were discussing, you and I and Brother Terrence and our IT specialist, Sister LaDonna, and we agreed they are all of those. Okay, and so you don't engage in that kind of dialogue on that level with people. You just don't do that. When you have this on tape in front of your face, what happened? And so what I'm saying to us is the absolute, as Chuck pointed out about deteriorating, this is the end of going into their system of jurisprudence. And any so-called leader who persists in saying to our people that this is where we need to go is to the same people that killed our child and go to them to seek justice, that person needs to be set aside. Okay? That's my position on all of this. This cop has not had to say a word publicly. All of the evidence is being put out in the public, just like with Zimmerman. All right? The victim is being slandered, defamed, just like with Zimmerman. And
right.
so the whole base is being laid. See, he and his lawyer are allowed to sit somewhere. Let's see what they got. Let's see the autopsy. Let's see this. Let's hear from their witnesses. Then some anonymous woman calls in to one of these redneck stations and says, well, the officer talked to me, and he told me that Michael Brown just kept coming and kept coming. It was unbelievable. Now, she's not subjected to any type of interrogation or questioning. See, and so the media spreads that all over the place. When are we going to wake up and do what Sister Yanaza just said and
That's
go
right.
home? We need to go home.
That's right.
Yeah.
So we got...
Yes,
sir. Go right
ahead,
Brother Terrence.
Yeah, before we go into that, and I'm only doing this because I know the discussion is going to be heated, and I know we're going to run out of time. but I just wanted to add to the introduction of our two guests, and I say this because hip hop is the most powerful force on the planet today as it relates to teaching and reaching our young people. Hip hop across
right.
the country and across the world is moving all nationalities, colors. I mean, it doesn't matter who you are, young and old. Hip hop touches them. And Brother Chuck is the CEO of one of the largest hip hop venues or avenues to get the message and the word out on allhiphop.com. And I bring this up because he is not afraid, and they are not afraid to play the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan on their show and let people know what the minister is doing. They help promote Savior's Day. And I say that is because that venue, and if we know that hip-hop is worldwide and they allow that the minister's words be played on there, that's a testimony to them. And I just didn't want
right.
that to be not out there.
Yes, sir.
And his brother Grouch and Sister Yanaza and the work that she had done to make that connection with allhiphop.com, as well as Grammy award winner Sits Time with Good Music, Malik Youssef, that was also in attendance Sunday and with the special invite. These are people that are heavily in the music industry, heavily connected. These are not just up and coming. These are people that have record deals, music deals,
right.
and Grammys. That are connected to the whole industry. So
yes,
for
sir.
Them to be on the show, I really give them much respect. And the medium that they're allowing that message of Minister Farrakhan to get out there, and I just wanted to say that before
yes,
we get
sir.
Into the discussion. So I thank them.
Appreciate that.
Really for being on
thank
there.
Thank you. Thank you,
yes,
Brother
sir.
Terrence.
Yeah, good point. I'm so glad you did that. All right, Sister Anna is on, and she's got a comment. And let's see, is her mic. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Anna.
Wa alaikum salam.
Yes, ma'am, you're alive on Elevated Places.
Yes, ma'am, I just wanted to make a comment. I saw a post today. It was by a group called AMTVmedia.com. And the commentator said the same thing that Minister Farrakhan, well, he verified what the minister said Sunday, that this operation has come from the Justice Department. And what he said that Ferguson was chosen because martial law is to be instituted all over the world. And he said that this particular place was chosen, well, not exactly this particular place, but these killings are to force the people to rise up. And these innocent victims, these are innocent victims that have that are being killed just to bring about martial law. And, you know, I was saying, you know, it looks exactly like that. So, you know,
that's
I just
exactly
wanted to know,
right.
Yeah, he said these people, they're just murdering. And, you know, what we should be doing is trying to find out who implemented this murderous plot. And
well,
why is everybody going along with it?
I think we already know who implemented it.
Right.
We know that the
Justice
Department,
I mean, if you if you've read The Behold of the Pale Horse and if you listen to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad as well as Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, we know
right.
who implemented it.
That's right.
It's been taught in the teachings, and if there's any question, we could always go back to the books and the DVDs of Bill's speeches and the CDs. We know who implemented it. It's like what the enemy always has they had a plan way back when they wanted to come to America. They had a plan way back then, and in our history, they had a plan of what they wanted to use America for, and when they found out that they were indigenous people already here, they had a plan for them. And 400, close to 500 years later, that plan has been successful. Unfortunately, it's just time for us to come together and start making our plan.
Well said. Yes. And you know, Sister Ann, to just add, because Sister Yanaza said it exactly right, we know it, and as late as in the time and what must be done, the minister revealed to us with much clarity the existence of a shadow government. So one reason you're seeing the type of confusion and chaos in all of these matters is, of course, first of all, the Caucasian world is falling. Everything that they attempt to do fails. The ability, as he taught in Study Guide 21 on the new educational paradigm, every solution they develop to every problem fails because the end of their rule has come. That's number one. But also there is a clash within their ranks as to how to go about this. But if you remember, he said Sunday that he watched Tiananmen Square in China on television and watched those tanks roll over Chinese college students who were standing yeah. up against a repressive government. He has told us for years, beginning with Stop the Killing, that tour, that the military of the U.S. was going to be rolling down the street in U.S. cities. And now they have the technology. See, they have smaller but more powerful weaponry that can maneuver right. among residential streets. And so where do you first test your weaponry? You test it on the people that you are attempting to exterminate anyway, which is the black man and woman. Everything is coming right. together that we were warned would happen. And the other thing he said to us, he said to so-called Negroes, you'll be the one to call for it. Because the enemy is going to alienate you from your own children. And you will be the one asking. And lo and behold, here we're talking about it right now, how our own people, Brother Ridgely, you said it. It's our people standing and calling for the National Guard. I heard a woman today who's a congressional representative from Florida, in where Trayvon Martin's family, that district. She was talking about how to conduct yourself. Black males need to be taught how to conduct themselves when they encounter the police, and how you should freeze and you should have your hands up in the air. Lady, he did have his hands in the air.
Come on.
Okay. See, this is deaf, dumb, and blind. So you have a generation now that have to be properly directed because they are God's children. And they are here to roll over that type of self-destructive slave thinking. And the only way we're going to get a grip on our youth, who my 17-year-old daughter today told me, she said, Mom, do you know people my age are saying we're savages? See, calling this city Chi-Rack, falling into the trap that the enemy has set. You see, we've got to roll in and regain order. We're talking about peace. They're talking about order. And for them, order is a reduction in the population of the black, brown, and red, and yellow populations on this planet.
Well, you
we're
going
to go. Oh, yes, sir.
You know, to speak
go
to.
Go ahead, Brother Reed.
Who is the one in charge of all of this? Well, the one in charge of all of this is the Negro. It's like you said, because the enemy has always had a plan, but the problem is our leadership his soul out, and they're working for the enemy, allow the enemy's plan to work, and will not allow them to hear the direct guidance of Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Just like you said about this sister down there in Florida. Minister Farrakhan, at the end of his lecture, he said, oh, why did Moses spend so much time in the wilderness? Why would he run around for 40 years? Well, let's say that the Pharaoh's people, Pharaoh's children, Pharaoh's property could die off. It's those who still worship Pharaoh is the problem, not Pharaoh. Pharaoh's been doing his thing. It's the Negroes who worship Pharaoh is our problem because they're the ones who sell us out, and they're in the way, blocking the light and the leadership of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. We're going to go to Sister Joella calling out of 202 Washington, D.C.
Assalamu
alaikum. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Joella. You are live.
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum. Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum. Just wanted to comment about what's going on. First of all, Sister Ava, I try to get you on Sundays, and the line just stays so busy there. So Dr. Ridgely, you know, you and Brother Terrence, we're just so grateful that you're on the air, and the two guests are just so happy that you're there. But I just want to just comment on all that we're saying about separation and the need for it, because I think it was on the minister's on the final call about this other brother who was killed in St. Louis. And I don't know, but someone did a telephone video on him and just how he was shot down in the streets because he was so-called wielding a knife, and he had just taken some soda, some energy drinks, and some buns or, you know, donuts or something. But the mere fact in which they showed how they allowed this poor brother to just bait them on and then just shoot him down cold-blooded in the streets like that. And the same thing that happened with Brother Trayvon as well as Brother Michael. And how now they're coming up with this alibi. Just like the minister said, the enemy always uses the same MO. They're saying now that the cop's face, Wilson's face was so damaged so they had to take him to the doctor, and we'll be seeing that. They said the same thing about Zimmerman. So what we're seeing is their same old MO that they do, and this is why we need to just stop listening to our leaders who are Negro leaders who are not leaders, but listen to the minister, because when he talked about justifiable homicide many years ago, I mean, this is coming into fruition today. So may Allah continue to bless your show and bless us to continue to think about separation. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Thank you so much. And Brother Chuck, how do you see the minister's message is being received? I know he held a summit at the Salam restaurant for 2 days. And
yes.
I wanted to get your take on that with the young people. And as Brother Terrence pointed out, there was, you know, gangbangers, there were poets, artists, every walk of life among our youth.
Absolutely. I definitely feel that the minister's message was received by the hip-hop community, particularly those that were in attendance and able to really, quite frankly, get a chance to talk to him, touch him, and really hear the words straight out of his mouth. I think it was a timely message because it also spoke largely of very basic matters such as keeping the peace amongst each other. When you see something like Mike Brown happen, you definitely begin to, your beefs are become very trivial quickly. And I think it may be a little harder for some of the younger brothers to get that, but I think that a lot was accomplished that day, and some major beefs were squashed right there on the spot. And he spoke very frankly to us. He was, you know, quite honestly, he was funny at times. I think he could definitely be a comedian, and that was beautiful to have him speak to us in that way, because sometimes it gets to be preachy to the young people,
mm-hmm.
and I think that once you begin to be preachy or they don't think that you really can relate to them or you're not one with them, then it becomes a chasm or split between the old and the young. And I think he was wonderful, and he definitely did. You know, he's 82 years old, 81, I believe.
81.
And
yes, sir.
81 years old, and looked younger than some of us in attendance. So it was definitely an eye-opener. And I think we have to continue to spread that message in a way that our people can receive it. We have to meet them where they are, and I think that's what really happened. A lot of people try to talk to them like a scholar or, you know, something that they can't take, receive, and I thought it was wonderful.
I love that. You know, what you said about, as you just ended with, you answered the question I was going to ask, how to keep it moving. And you said it, continue mm-hmm. to spread the word. And obviously, if young people hear from other young people, and that is where you have the power of a Sister Yanasta and others, that a person listening doesn't feel as though they are being spoken to in a way that invalidates their feelings and their reality.
Right.
And that's what I've learned from the minister of the countless things I thank him for. And I thank my own parents, too, because of their humility as people that in life we got to put ourselves in the other person's shoes. Anytime we're communicating with anybody for any reason, and it's very hard for the brain to do that, but if we can just take a moment and say, I wonder how I would feel if I was this person that I'm, you know, going on and on with. And I love what you're saying, Brother Chuck, about the preachy aspect. And frankly, even for the older among us, that's kind of played out. We have enough information, okay? It's like when you learn to drive a car, there's only so much that can be said, so many times you can be shown the steering wheel and the ignition. Sooner or later, you have to get behind that wheel and drive that car.
Right.
Otherwise, you're gonna just get out of it and go find something else to do. And I think the biggest fault for us in the previous generation is we're not doing anything. We're just talking. And we're presenting young people with a theory, but they see the white man in power.
Right.
So no matter how wicked he is, what they see is he's successful.
Right.
And I mean, you can't deny him that. He's successful in carrying out his agenda. Like Sister just called in and said, this was always their agenda, to roll over us, okay? You know, and so for us to stand there and say, they need to be retrained. I mean, you sound crazy. I'm sorry, but...
I don't know who said that. I haven't heard that one from anybody yet. Most people think that we definitely need more community policing and more that's what I'm hearing, even from
what's hilarious. Oh, go ahead, Chuck.
Pardon me?
You was finishing up your point. I'm sorry, I was going to say something, but go ahead.
I'm done.
Oh, what's hilarious, what you said, Dr. Ava, is the fact that my mother, when she was falsely in prison in Fort Worth, Texas, and when she got out, she started doing cultural diversity training in federal government with the police, within the prisons, to try to teach them to be a little bit more culturally sensitive. And as a matter of fact, she ended up going back to the prison that she was imprisoned in. And in Arizona and all across the country, she was putting together these programs. So it's funny that you said that because, you know, she did that work. And look, they didn't continue because they didn't want to. They didn't want to implement what she was saying. They did it because it looked good
for the masses at that time, you know, in the 90s, but they didn't want to continue on with that same program that she put together to police to the police all across the nation of cultural sensitivity. They didn't want to do that because they have an agenda. They already know what they want to do. It was already written,
Go right ahead and finish. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, what sickens me is the fact of President Obama of how insensitive he is publicly about everything that's going around across the nation. I mean, you know, I my heart does go out to the family with the journalist that he was just beheaded, you know, we have millions or thousands of people of color that are being killed and abused by police here within the United States, and he just seems to be very insensitive. And it's because of the fact that he also knows, I strongly believe, that he also knows what the master plan and the agenda is, and he knows that he is being used as a puppet in the process. And what also upsets me is that if they just continue to use these certain type of black men that are wanting to be puppets, and they're wanting it from the police officer, or what is he, the chief of police in Ferguson, that they're using with him, and then President Obama. It just seems they always want to put someone that looks like us but does not have the same concept and ideas of us. And, you know, to put them in the forefront and say, hey, you know, speak to your people, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah,
to your point, and Chuck, that was Al Sharpton retraining.
Did he have his mic on when he said that?
I mean, he just said it. He has said it countless times. He's on the air 4 hours a day. Frankly, I'll be honest with you. I'm not following anybody that has a job. Okay. Marcus Garvey didn't have a job. Malcolm didn't have a job. Dr. Martin Luther King didn't have a job working for the devil. The minister does not leave the rostrum and go to a job. Okay, and so if you're getting a paycheck from the enemy of our liberation, I'm watching you every night reading a teleprompter. You don't even talk like a black man, okay? And this is why you keep saying, Now, that's just what it is. And I don't mean to just target him because there are others. And Sister Yanaza's point, Captain Ron, I remember a comedy movie called Captain Ron. I mean, brother, are you serious?
Right.
Are you serious? I mean, some of these people,
right.
I'm like, am I watching a cartoon? I mean, are you all
exactly.
really, are you that blind that so you can have a car and a house? You are, and that's what the minister told our young brothers. He woke them up. The excuse at least they have is they're young, okay? And you remember he told them, brothers, you're co-conspirators. And I told the minister when I spoke to them on Monday, I said, I watched them receive an epiphany because nobody had told them that. Why? Because the generation responsible for them is too scared and cowardly and selfish and greedy to speak the truth and to say you are the generation that is the fulfillment of the promise to Abraham. At what point does the kidnapped victim get up out of the kidnapper's house? When those girls up there in Cleveland, those young women, and it was a brother that got them out, he didn't get any play, but that brother got them out of there. When that door opened, they were gone.
Come on.
Okay? Nobody was saying, well, let me see if I can talk to him.
Come on.
Now that's after 10 years, but we're 400 plus. And what should we teach our children?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of conversation? My son said, "Daddy, why should I get a degree and I can get killed. And I said, son, I don't know. I'm going to go on TV. And let's talk to the audience. Now, I'm not just making up what I just said. That was said over the air. You know, maybe your children should slap you in your face. Because what kind of parent am I? I'm not teaching my children to comply with genocide. That's why Hamas said, okay, this is how we're going out.
Right.
It's better for us to just go on out of here than to continue to call this living. But anyway, let me get off this soapbox for a minute. We got Sister Patricia. Sister Patricia has been holding, and she is on 647 area code. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to Elevated Places, Sister Patricia.
Wa alaikum salam. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted
You're
to make
welcome.
A quick comment. I just wanted to bring to the panel's attention that today, August 21st, is the 183rd anniversary of the start of our brother Nat Turner's rebellion. And as I was reflecting on it, I just realized that, you know, as history seems to sort of be repeating itself with the dissatisfaction of black people. And I guess my concern is, you know, with the violence that, you know, obviously we saw then, I just see that as being the outcome of what's going to happen sort of in the future with our dissatisfaction sort of not being addressed. And I was hoping that maybe you could comment on that. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for that insight. That's why I love this forum, because we're constantly being educated by our listeners as well as our panel and our guests. I'm going to, Dr. Rizzi, kind of do a sneak preview. The research team, hopefully this will be in the final call on some of the horrific history of St. Louis. And, of course, you all know Missouri is the home of the Dred Scott decision. I'll say that first, where, it was determined that, or rather expressed, that a Negro has no rights that a white man is required to respect. That has, even though that decision was overturned, the mindset behind the decision, and this is why you cannot legislate freedom, justice, and equality. There's something genetic in these people. If we go to the time and what must be done, and we can handle truth, the truth of Dr. Yacoub and the truth of the manufacture of Caucasian people. See, these are truths that until we face them, we're going to continue to find our children lying in their own blood in the streets. That is not going to stop. We've got Brother Kenya. He's been holding a while. And let's get his mic open. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Kenya. You're alive.
Wa alaikum salam. How are you, ma'am?
Wonderful, sir. Wonderful.
Yes, ma'am. I was calling to talk about that St. Louis killing. Have you seen that video, Sister Ava?
The actual killing
the
of
brother
Michael
that they
Brown?
Said. No,
the
not
video.
Michael Brown. This is the second brother that was killed.
Oh, the
Tuesday.
Second killing. No, I have not.
Yeah.
I have not seen the video.
Okay, well,
that they
sister,
said
I'm wielding
a knife. Okay.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Well, I sent it to you. I'm one of your Twitter followers, so I sent it to
All
you.
All right. Oh,
and gosh. This brother who filmed it has the entire thing.
My God.
From the time the police show up, from the time they shoot him, and it's just a matter of minutes. There was no, let me talk him down, and let me, you know, Caucasians have this thing where they do suicide by cop. And the cops are so patient, and they just try to, well, sir, let's not, you know. With this brother that just got shot on Tuesday, it was like they show up. I mean, and the brother that's videoing, he has it all. You see the car pull up, and within a matter of minutes, 2 minutes maybe, 9 to 10 shots, he's dead. And then they have the audacity to handcuff him while he's dead.
Well, I hope we're listening to this.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. So, but my question for you is, why do you, do you have any idea why the media wouldn't be covering this? I mean, I kind of know the answer, but I kind of want to hear your take on it.
Yeah, you're saying why they would not?
Yes, ma'am, because you've heard
this. You know the answer.
Right, yes, ma'am.
I mean, look, come on, you know the answer. The same reason very little attention was played or the – first of all, you have a very low-level information public that is more interested in Real Housewives and Bad Girls Club and Scandal.
You got to understand.
See, this thing wasn't just, as Sister Yanaza's point, how all this has been in play a long time. And one thing about white people, they do the whole plan, okay? And so they have aspects of it that are all going on simultaneously. So while they're building up their military, they are also infusing the culture with all of this debauchery and low life living and insisting that the hip hop community use the most profane and horrific language, and now it's kill, 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 all of that. So no, they're not going to put that any more than they put. If you watch the convenience store incident, you will see Michael Brown. My husband pointed this out to me way back in the week, and now they're finally talking about it, the lawyers on some of the interviews. You see Michael Brown putting something on the counter. There's a transaction at the cash register.
Wow.
Okay.
Oh.
Then he walks out, and this little whatever he is jumps in front of him. That's the other thing. See, you can't charge me with assault when you jumped in front of me and put your hand on me.
Right.
See?
Right.
Also, we keep talking about, put it on Twitter, let's stop using the word robbery. There was no robbery. Robbery is a forcible taking. I put a gun in your face, I put a knife at you, or I just threaten you with my muscle. Give me that bag.
Mm-hmm.
Give me them potato chips. That's a forcible taking. This, if it was that, was a shoplift. But see, now what we see is the black reality of life. How many of us have had the misfortune of going into one of these nasty stores, okay, and they talk to you crazy? First of all, they ignore you when you come in. So there's tension from the first moment. Okay, then when they do address you, it's demeaning. You are an irritant, even though you feed their family, you pay for their big house out in the suburbs with white people, okay? You put their children through college. They overcharge you, okay?
Right.
So that's where the tension comes from. The owner said he never called the police. But one of his relatives was in the store that day. Okay, and had a child with him, so evidently he felt some tension. He's the one that made the call, all right? But all that to say, what we are dealing with now is the reality of the black condition. So, you know, to your point, Brother Kenya, it's no, they're not going to show that. They're not going to show you that. They're going to show it's their network. Where's our network, see?
Right.
Too many of our people want to be on their network.
Come on.
And it's dividing our community. Our biggest problem right now is not white people, because Allah has white people. He got that. Our problem is us.
That's right.
On two ends, the old guard Negroes who are saying they lead us. They're lying to white people and telling them they're leading us, and they're not.
Right.
And then our youth, who we have left to their own to rear themselves.
Right.
Because we're too busy driving around in a Lexus.
That's right.
Which is the 21st century version of a chicken and a biscuit. See, that is the problem. Okay. But let me read this real quick from the research team. Which will be coming out with an article on St. Louis's history Mm-hmm. And one incident, to give you an idea of this city, over the span of 1 week in 1917, East St. Louis whites rampaged in an orgy of grisly violence that included random lynchings, stonings, shootings, rapes, amputations, human torchings, house burnings, iron pipe beatings, and axe murders, culminating in the killing of 200 blacks, though the exact number may never be known. Rampaging whites destroyed $7 million in property, $85 million in today's value, and 10,000 blacks were believed to have fled from their homes. One arrested man was heard to say, quote, "I've killed my share of niggers today. I have killed so many, I'm tired. And somebody else can finish them." Just wanted to give you all that.
And Dr. Ava, I just want to jump in here because I think Chuck and Yanacha can bring a nice sense to what we just said. When the brother said, why aren't they reporting this in the news, one of the things that happened, Talib Kweli, as I said earlier, one of major hip-hop artists, was on Don Lemon's show, and one of the things he was saying, and you can see it live, and it was going back and forth, but he was saying, the article or the news that CNN is reporting is false and it's not right. And he said, I was right there. And Don Lemon said, well, you know, we got a lot of people reporting, and that's what you saw, but we got reporters everywhere. He said, no, the particular report that your whoever did, he said, I was there at that particular scene that he was talking about. And he said the way they had it was like the police was chasing after black men. He said they were chasing after black men, women, and children. And it wasn't because a black man started. It was because they started it and initiated it. So there is a spin on it. And I just know that social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram is placing a whole lot. You have on-ground live streaming with the technology of phone, and young people are doing a whole lot of stuff. And that's why I would, you know, say with Chuck and Yanacha, what is, you know, what else do they know about as far as the hip-hop community is getting the word out and getting our story out there? Because we do have, as we know, the final call on the ground, our young people on the ground. I know there's a youth rally planned for this Saturday. So I was wondering if Chuck or Yanacha knows about any other stories or how social media or even how hiphop.com is being used to get the word out on the ground about what's going on in Ferguson.
Well, we definitely, you know, are trying to combat false reporting and definitely using our power as what we do have, which is obviously difficult considering for a number of reasons. As much technology as we have, it's very hard to compile a lot of this information. A lot of it is also difficult when your own people have a perception of themselves. It's hard to turn that around as well, because a lot of us are, you know, justifying what happened for whatever reason they feel, you know. So you have that as well. But we do what we can. We have a few people. Well, I had a person down there. She went home. She's going back. And then I have other folks who are more or less correspondents, not with All Hip Hop per se, who are also giving us information. And last but not least, you know, we absolutely support our brothers and sisters that are down there, like Talib Kweli, my brother Malik from Occupy the Hood, Rosa Clemente.
Good, right.
You know, and others like and hip hop artists like Rebel Diaz who are down there too, and many more to come as well. So, and not to mention folks like Young Jeezy, Nelly, they've gone down and they've spoken as well. So these are, you know, I talked to Young Jeezy for a long time just yesterday, and I think we have to begin to again challenge our artists to create a climate that allows the people to be receptive to different thoughts. Because right now, as you've already mentioned, you know, you have ratchet reality TV, you have a certain type of music that's promoted through mainstream outlets, and then you have just everyday media that, you know, makes it difficult for us. You know, unfortunately, they have a larger platform. They have more readership. And so our own artists oftentimes will go to other outlets. So as far as Ferguson and going forward is concerned, We just have to continue to be, you know, disciplined, resolute. I even have to talk to my own writers at times because, you know, quite frankly, sometimes they read regular media, and then you feel the regular media's perspective creeping up into our report. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard. It's multi-layered, but it's difficult to, you know, it's a difficult task indeed. You know, we just don't. I mean, just to be brutally honest, we just don't have the bodies to full, you know, and still cover
right.
everything else going
right.
on. To cover it nearly as comprehensively as we want to.
Right.
And you know, you
know
going
I,
back
I
on, go ahead, Sister Yanazda. Did you want to respond, to Brother Terrence?
Yes. To add on to that is, you know, hip-hop artists have such a huge influence. Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said that 1,000 of his speeches is equivalent to one hip-hop song. And Nas, you know, in his song, he said, all I need is one mic. And in the past, I was able to use use hip-hop and use to fight against the SB 1070 law in Arizona. And within 1 week when Governor Jan Brewer signed that law, SB 1070, into law, basically stating it was about immigration, but it was also stating if you look like an immigrant and you didn't have the proper credentials, then the police and ICE had the authority to send you back to where they thought that you was from. And so when I disagreed with that, I used music. I used one song. I called Chuck D up and asked him, can I redo By the Time I Get to Arizona? And I reached out to Chuck Creekmore and asked him if he could premiere it on allhiphop.com. And after that, it just syndicated, went viral, went to CNN, went to MSNBC, Fox News as the song that was fighting against the SB 1070. And so hip-hop can be used as a platform for activism and music. It has been stated, it has been shown and proved throughout the years that it has been. And what is so crazy is that we see, like Chuck Creekmore just said, in regards to Jeezy and J. Cole and a lot of certain artists, and even Diddy has posted something, you know, on his Instagram calling out President Obama in regards to Ferguson. And so celebrities are starting to take notice, starting to speak up. But all of a sudden, why all of a sudden the ALS Association comes up with this ice bucket challenge to call out celebrities to do
right.
an ice bucket challenge in the midst of this whole ordeal of what's going on and using them for this platform for a
yep.
cause where we will not see the financial benefits for it as a group of
yep.
people. And they're using celebrities all across the country to put ice water, wasting water, but putting
yep.
water all over them just so they could use that platform. And if you notice, they have raised so much money for an association that me personally has never even heard about and,
yep.
and a disease that I really don't even have a lot of knowledge about. And then when they could have used this their celebrity platform for what's going on in America and with our people. So they know, like I said, and I'm going to continue saying it, there's a plan and there's a master planner. And they know they know exactly what they're doing in regards to, they know the influence of entertainers, of hip-hop. I mean, I saw Dr. Dre, you know, putting the ice bucket on his head. It's just so many celebrities, and they're like, oh, you got 24 hours. Well, how about you have 24 hours to be able to raise money in order for us to be, you know, to help Malik Zula Shabazz with all the lawsuits that's going on and putting money back into the community, into urban America. How about you have 24 hours in order for us to come together and go up against these tanks? And, you know, there's so many different things that can have been done within 24 hours instead of putting throwing ice water all, you know, on your head. So, yeah.
And also, you know, how about the killing of Michael Brown, because you brought this, you made this come back to my mind, Sister Yanazda, that I've been meaning to say since all this happened, that this came before there could be any analysis of the conviction of this white man outside of Detroit of felony second-degree murder in the case of Renisha McBride, the 19-year-old sister who was shot mm-hmm. in her face last November. That was a conviction of felony murder in the second degree. And before there could be any real time for black people to process that and for the nation to process that, for white folks to process it, because they're not orientated to any accountability for the taking of a black life, you see. And so, to me, there was a determination to make sure there was no such thing as a moment in time where white folks could say, wait a minute, you know, we can pay a price for this. Mm-hmm. They rolled right over that, and I think, too, it also generated anger on the part mm-hmm. of law enforcement. How dare they convict a white man mm-hmm. of murder in the death of a black female? Mm-hmm. You see, so that along, and what you're saying now is very powerful, and I don't want us to ever put that past them. They are masters at diversionary tactics. And we're down to 8 minutes, a little under 8 minutes, and we've got Sister Darcelle has been holding for quite some time. Let's get to her.
Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.
I just wanted to mention a few things. I'm your Twitter follower, and I hope you had an opportunity to read what I had to say to you. But I want to say with the rise in inequality, there always will be war versus war, and that's waste and ruin and the wealthy and resourced. And I think at this time we should need to look at this Ferguson opportunity as a too big to fail, and that we should challenge our hip-hop artists and those who are in media to a platform to promote the economic blueprint. And I wanted to know your perspective on my thought on that.
Yes, ma'am. You always bring such insight. Panel?
I mean, what can I say?
I strongly believe in regards to putting together, as a matter of fact, we are in the process of, you know, speaking to hip-hop artists, and the Honorable Minister Farrakhan brought that up in the meeting, in the hip-hop summit, in regards to, you know, using their influence for something that is bigger than them, and that could be able to help us economically. So I think that that's a good point, and I strongly believe that we should even push that even more within the hip-hop community with the economic blueprint.
In lyrics?
I was going to say briefly that, you know, I know I just spoke of not having the, you know, the raw numbers that some of these mainstream media outlets have, but I also want to articulate that, you know, I am I haven't yet, but I do have a plan of my own where I'm going to reach out to some of my actual competitors to really bring some of these things to them, where we can just all agree that, you know, something like Mike Brown is a priority, you know, in our reporting, or, you know, certain things that are universal we can all agree on and share these stories, or, you know, these, you know, if it's some type of an agenda or whatever the case may be, and really get together in that way. As far as artists are concerned, you know, I have a, you know, it's my intent to really reach out to these guys on a personal level and ask them to do certain types of records, and, you know, through All Hip Hop, promote those records as well, to and as well get media on board and the blogs, because that's the only way that we'll really get something accomplished is working together.
I agree, and for an artist to be responsible and not dropping, you know, videos like Anaconda by Nicki Minaj in the midst of all of this,
to divert people. I mean, it's just crazy what these, you know, what some of the labels and the people behind it just try to make use these artists to promote something that and not holding them accountable.
Sister Ava, I just want to jump in. I know the Hip Hop Caucus will be doing a national call next Thursday, and we should have a list in a couple of days of the national artists to discuss the issue with Ferguson. But not only that, there are a lot of artists that are coming out and are doing some stuff that's going viral as it relates to this. Because, literally while I'm on this call, I'm on another national call, and I just want to let you know that there's a lot of organizations that unite in dealing with civil rights violations in St. Louis, dealing with, 300 teachers are dealing with how to deal with mental illness. They're trying to deal with the Department of Justice and the use of race with the police officer. There's a lot of different things that are going on around here, and I think the hip-hop community, we want to use our artists to spread whatever messages and whatever things that we can in their videos and in their songs, so we're trying to push that.
Okay, thank you for that, and we're right about at the end. I also want to note that, to the last points that were made, I know as a mother of young people, of teens, that it's very real that what is in their ear are hip-hop artists. You know, no matter what we say, but literally in their ear with the earbuds and the headset, literally in their ear going directly into their brain. So when the minister says one hip-hop song or a few seconds even, see the importance of the message being conveyed, and it can only come through their peers or people close to them in time. And, you know, we have to do two things. Number one, have the positive messages that are coming out, and then also call out a Nicki Minaj or others when they persist in this. It's not going to be effective coming from older people who are expected to be opposed to anything you do. It's got to come from their peers. And then also we have to prove to their providers that they are not as effective as they might think they are. That has to start happening too. You know, some of the things from the civil rights era are appropriate. They just did not carry them to where the Honorable Elijah Muhammad told them to carry it, which is to complete separation. But they shut down the city of Birmingham when black people stopped riding that bus. Right. And we've been told over and over again, we got $1 trillion that we generate in this economy. We can shut, we go to the movies more than anybody. We can shut down just about any retail industry anytime that we develop the mind to do that. And so the minister has taken care of the airdrops. We got to work on the ground. And there is Muhammad's economic blueprint that we must get on top of, because lastly, we have to ask ourselves the question, why are our boys and men standing on a corner where these enemies can get to them in the first place? You don't see theirs.
That's right.
They keep theirs engaged somewhere. And so the first thing we got to do is protect and control our community. So thank you all so much. Brother Chuck,
thank
Sister Yanazda, Dr. Ridley, Brother Terrence, Sister LaDonna, Sister Rona, Brother Ashad, Sister Valerie. I'm thanking all the Elevated Places team on Blog Talk, as well as WVON right here in Chicago. And let's follow and let's act upon the message of the one man who is the guide and the guided, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Thank you all for listening. May Allah bless us. Assalamu alaikum.